I'm your host, Dr. Rebecca Blacksmith, here in the Leaders Portfolio Studio. Now joining us is Mr. Mark Bloom, founder and partner of Network Realty, located in Galveston, Texas. His company buys properties across 14 cities, connects them to buyers, and has the buyer restore them. So, Mark, can you explain that process for us?
Sure. So it's a net worth realty, like your financial net worth. And we actually have physical offices in each one of those 14 cities. And we go out and we locate assets that are undervalued or underpriced in the marketplace based on the repairs needed. They all need repairs of some sort. We do a basic analysis on those. We will come up with a value after repairs and the repairs that are needed for those. Besides doing that internally, we will go outside and get a third-party licensed general contractor's opinion on the repairs. So we try and be as accurate as we can on that. We do have a relationship with Home Depot where they'll do a lot of bids in certain cities for us. But we are trying to get as accurate a number for the investor, the buyer, as humanly possible. We also go back every year and quality check our values. And on average, our buyers receive a little over 100%, about 103% on average, for the last 4 years running in most of our cities compared to what we predicted that value to be. So we try and give them good numbers so that they can have a relatively easy due diligence or easier due diligence and make the decision on whether they want to purchase that property.
Now, are all of your buyers investors, or do any of them ever buy it to live in it?
No, I mean, really, they're all investors. Are there some that choose to live in them from time to time, or they change their investment strategy or whatever? I'm sure there are, but the only way to purchase our properties is either with cash or a bridge loan, what some people call a hard money loan. Most hard money lenders are not going to be able to, because of the laws, allow that property to be owner-occupied. It's going to have to be a quote-unquote investment or another property. So they can't, otherwise it wouldn't be commercial paper. I'm doing air quotes, you can't see it. It wouldn't be commercial paper, and so they can't do it. So most of the time, no, but I'm sure it happens.
And you started your own lender, 212 Loans. Did you do that because then you saw a need for the other piece of the model, or did you start that before Net Worth Realty?
Well, great question. It's kind of a secondary, necessary element. So when you open up, particularly in a new city, as many of your listeners may know, you come across different people in the business, and some of them are wonderful, and some of them are, you know, several shades less than wonderful. And when you have that in a lender, it creates massive havoc for the deals. And when you create massive havoc in these deals, you know, we have some regular sources that we go to, and so that then creates havoc in our downline. So we had to, for the need of having a smooth transaction for the end, for what we consider the end buyer, the investor who's going to do the work, we had to have that ability internally.
And it's also harder to get a traditional loan with a distressed property. That's another reason, right?
Much harder. It takes, you know, the FHA loan that is available for that is a cumbersome best case scenario and is also very time consuming. So for our process, when you're dealing with these types of properties, a lot of times, or some of the value you're going to be able to create is due to the time that you take or the lack of time that you need to finish this transaction. So time is always of the essence, and those make it very difficult.
And at some point, as part of your business model, you also help a home buyer find renters if they need, or you'll connect a home buyer to contractors for restoration. Again, was that part of the model in the beginning, or did that grow out of a need?
You know, really, that grew out of a need. We found that, again, contractors are sometimes difficult to vet and know what you're getting into, and even the ones that have done really good can get in a bad spot on a job, and all of a sudden, it's a domino effect. And so we found that our success very much is tied to our investor's success, which is integral for any successful business relationship, aligned interests. Well, that's a good thing. And when they would have issues, it would cause issues for us because we are there. It is not our responsibility. It is not our project. We don't share in the profits or losses or anything like that. However, if you're successful in the project, you're going to come back and buy more. And if you're not, you're most likely not, unless it's something well outside of our control. So we try and be there for support as much as we can to help reduce any risks and see newer investors through from some of our experiences. So contractors, definitely. And then exit strategy, out of a necessity, just because in the investment grade properties, obviously you have regular tenants, and you also have Section 8 tenants and other kinds of subsidized tenants. And most residential real estate agents aren't very familiar with or desire to be familiar with renting properties in general, but particularly Section 8 or other government subsidized rents. And so some of that was out of necessity. And so you just start to want to assist. When net worth, when we relist a property for one of the people who bought a property from us, we only charge them a 1% listing. It's a relatively full service listing, save major open houses on a regular basis. So we're trying to keep as much money in that buyer investor's pocket as possible. And it makes it difficult for us as the person selling that property when they're getting taxed with a full 6% commission on the backside.
And are the majority of your properties then sold or rented out to, or I guess generally rented out to Section 8 tenants or subsidized government subsidized tenants? Or
no.
No,
Not at all. Though I will say that there are cities that we are involved in or have been involved in, that there is definitely a very large market for that because of just the nature of the cost of the housing versus what the rents are, the cost of the housing in those areas versus what the rents are in those neighborhoods. But by no means is it it's a very relative small portion of what we do.
Now, what are the methods you use to assess whether a property will increase in value?
Well, really, I mean, we're doing comparative market analysis, very similar to a licensed appraiser, only we're not a licensed appraiser. So some people would call it a broker's price opinion. We're going into the MLS, we're pulling the subdivision, we're pulling 6 months to a year, we're pulling everything within 20% square footage, greater or smaller. And we're looking at what the level of finish out is on those properties and what the similarities are. For example, do they all have granite countertops? In some of our markets, windows are very important, and some windows aren't very important. So are there new windows, or do they have the old windows, roof, AC, all this kind of things? Is it wood floors? Is it carpet, tile? So that we can come up with the accurate repair budget, because that's based on what the value is. We've got to come up with the scope of work. That comes from the quality of the top-end houses in the neighborhood.
And so when has your model been wrong? When have you not gotten it right?
Well, I mean, I'm sure we don't get it right from time to time. I think that there's, I don't know the numbers exactly off the top of my head. I could report back to you 100%, give you the exact right numbers. But I would say there's probably 10 to 20% of the people that we sell our properties to who experience getting less than what they, than what we would have predicted they would have gotten. Now, the problem there is, as many people who are involved in investment real estate know, there's a lot of decisions that get made at a project from the time you close on it until the time you go to have it appraised and or sold. And unfortunately, we're not in control of any of those. And each one of them plays a different, or has a different level of impact in what that property will actually appraise for and be sold for. So we are wrong, definitely, but I would venture to say it is easily under 20% if we're seeing that 20% of the people we sell to get below what we're putting the value at. Some of that is going to be part of the deal risk and bad decisions that were made, and in some cases it's going to be our fault or our mistake.
All right, we're speaking with Mr. Mark Bloom, founder and partner of Net Worth Realty. I'm Dr. Rebecca Blacksmith. You're listening to Leaders Portfolio at leadersportfolio.com. I want to thank the supporters of leadership, some of our Leaders Portfolio sponsors, Dennis Cole Architects, WOW Services Group, Green Tree Surgeons, Riverwalk, a development featured on the front page of the Wall Street Journal, and Hilton Garden Inn of Fairfax, Virginia, providing all your business meeting room needs. Again, here with us in the studio is Mr. Mark Bloom, founder and partner of Net Worth Realty. So, Mark, you got started in this business by working for a national developer and legal team, and then you started investing on your own.
Yeah, more or less. I was working as with in-house counsel for a large developer that did almost exclusively condo conversions. Wonderful company. I can't say enough about them. They were great. Name of the company is Crescent Heights of America. They're great. They do great work. I feel like I learned a lot there, and it definitely gave me my start. And then I happened to, as sometimes happens in life, bump into an old buddy of mine from college who was doing what we do now. And it was engaging. It was interesting. And I was lucky enough at the time to have the flexibility to be able to do that. And so I tried. And, you know, here we are almost 20 years later.
And so at some point, you could have just continued this model investing on your own, but instead you decided to, instead of doing all the house flipping and the investments yourself, you decided to kind of, you know, expand it to 14 cities. What made you decide, rather than just doing it yourself on your own, expanding it?
Well, I think I've always had a lofty ambition. I think my partners and I together probably have always had relatively lofty ambitions for ourselves personally. And I think it was one of those things that as the three of us kind of came together and saw, although we had a very different ideas on life and very different people personalities, it worked because we were all doing, following a similar model and the core principles of that model we stuck to. And so as we started to get people who were successful under us, I don't care how successful you are, eventually you're going to look to go to the next level. And so I've always operated with the idea that we don't pull the ladder up behind us. And so if someone wants what we have, then we allow them to go open an office. It's not a franchise model. We give them the blueprint. We give them the backing. We give them everything that they could possibly need and more: training, support, et cetera, proprietary software. And we go and do that. It's beneficial for everyone. They go and make more money. I wind up with an agent or a manager who's not disgruntled and feels like they're pigeonholed and stuck in a city and can't go do what they want to do because they're with the company. So it's a win-win for everyone.
And you have a law degree, you mentioned earlier, and a master's of finance, both from the University of Miami. What's your overall leadership philosophy?
Wow, that's a great question. I would say my overall leadership philosophy is to empower the people who you are leading and show them what their best version of themselves. Sure, there are moments, very honestly, where maybe I do think I'm smart or smarter than the average person, but the reality of it is I'm not that special. I wake up every day and I fight hard, and I'm willing to take the blows, and I'm willing to take the pain, and I'm willing to turn that into motivation. And so my leadership philosophy is to show people how they can do that and allow them to evolve into the best version of themselves. We try and show people how to, it's very difficult a lot of times for people to even recognize their strengths, let alone to learn how to play to those strengths. And then the second part, even more difficult, is to recognize that we actually have weaknesses and that we can see them in not just other people, but in ourselves, and then try and daily make some improvement in those. If you're willing to do that, as they say, you know, people often overestimate what they can accomplish in a year and underestimate what they can in 10. If you're willing to motivate someone and just help them learn daily, little things, just the tiniest thing, move forward, you know, in 5 or 10 years, they will have progressed past the point where they possibly ever thought they could be.
What leadership challenges have you had?
Oh, God. you know, do we, I don't think we have that long.
We have a few minutes.
You know, I think the nature of human beings is challenging, especially when you're dealing, you want to deal with people who are smart. A lot of times we say, you know, people say hire people who are smarter than you. Well, that's great. But the problem with that is a lot of times they know they're or think they're smarter than you. And so my biggest challenge in motivating people is people, getting them really out of their own way and understanding that if you just open yourself up to what has been successful, what the past has shown works, and in critiquing yourself, that the sky is not the limit, that there really is no limit, that you can do any any and everything possible. But you, in order to do that, you actually have to let go of all of your preconceived notions about who and what you are and what you've been told you can accomplish and do in your life. And you really have to embrace the possibility. That's difficult to get someone to do.
Where do you see your company heading in the next 5 years?
Oh, I see great things for our company. I think the market, generally real estate, I think the economy generally, though somewhat tumultuous, is sitting quite nicely. I think that my business, our industry, is one that has, though it's very large when you really look at the scope of individual landlords, property owners, small developers, et cetera, is massive. It's still very much a cottage industry in that it is, and again, we're just entering this transition. It is the last, I will say, unfully commoditized asset class out there. And so there's a long way for this to go as these funds are entering in, and Main Street is getting to more easily invest in real estate and learning more about it and being more open to the idea of it. And as a lot of us know, the returns that are available in single family, multifamily real estate, they blow pretty much everything out of the water that doesn't have massive amounts of risks or require you actually making a huge investment and starting some other business that you're going to go try and run a new business from scratch. So I see us growing. I see us continuing to grow and taking advantages of some of the opportunities that our size and scale will allow for the people who are buying from us. Because at the end of the day, if they're not happy, if they're not getting deals, if they're not progressing in their goals, then we're dead in the water.
Do you think there's going to be a downturn in housing in the next 10 years?
10 years.
10 years.
So, yeah, I think there probably will be downturns in housing in the next 10 years. And the reason I say that way is because I do not believe right now that we are positioned to have a national downturn or a national bubble in real estate. I believe that because we had such a massive bubble, and I could go into a lot of the detail, but just take it from me, my opinion, that because of that downturn, there's almost no way for all of these markets, barring some massive financial catastrophe, to have a bubble nationally. However, you are seeing rebound from that downturn at different paces in all these different markets, and you're going to see some local bubbles in the next 5 years. In the next 10 years, that definitely there will be some up and down that will create, my personal opinion, long-term buying opportunities. As a real estate investor myself, I always look to the mid to long term before I look to the short term.
And at one point
for my investment horizon.
And at one point, you ran your own real estate radio show.
Yes, we did a nationally syndicated radio show for quite some time, actually.
Great. Well, Mark, I want to thank you for joining us on Leaders Portfolio. We appreciate your time.
I appreciate you having me. Thank you so much. If I can ever be of assistance, please call us at Network.
I'm Dr. Rebecca Blacksmith. I want to thank the supporters of leadership, Leaders Portfolio sponsors, Dennis Cole Architects, WOW Services Group, Green Tree Surgeons, Riverwalk, which is a development featured on the front page of the Wall Street Journal, and Hilton Garden Inn of Fairfax, Virginia, providing all your business meeting room needs. If you're trying to reach the business community directly, consider sponsorship of Leaders Portfolio by sending us an email on our website for a sponsorship packet. I enjoy speaking with you about leadership. This has been Dr. Rebecca Blacksmith asking you what's in your portfolio.